And the podcast begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
No, you look different today.
Yeah, I back to Dr. Robotnik outfit.
Is this normal, like every day fucking mm-hmm. shit?
Yeah.
I wear the same thing every day.
Still $1,000 a day though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck was in the water in Westerville, Ohio, 2008?
I'm not really sure. You know, I never did get the report of the chemical analysis of it, but I'm sure there was a decent amount of hydrofluorosulfide or whatever they call fluoride that they add to the water.
Mm-hmm. There was something going on.
There was.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Give me my computer. I'm so sorry.
What? Oh, I'll let TJ enter. I'm like bad at
doing. I don't have anything in front of me because I don't have my computer. But guys,
I just start going.
Yeah. Yeah. You may recognize him. He might look a little bit different than the last time you saw him, but we have Mr. Wetzel from Attack Attack back in the stew today, and we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive, I think, kind of on just like the history, the lore of this band. You've gone through so many iterations, so many different members, so many ups and downs, and we are going to focus kind of on, I think, on the self-titled Attack Attack, mm-hmm. but I don't feel like we can really do this podcast without talking about like the whole picture.
Mm-hmm, totally.
That's kind of what I learned. Like when we were here last Friday, I was like, okay, you got to just like pick an album, dude. Like we got to do our homework on an album. Mm-hmm. But then we started doing like the research and I was like, okay, this is such a bigger thing than just like one album. And mm-hmm. we have to talk about all of it.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that I like want to ask is were you guys self-aware at the time of what you were doing, or was this like, we're throwing every style we like in a thing and that's what happens? Or was it intent that you don't hear that, by the way, or was it intentional?
Yeah, I think, it's funny. I was just talking about this earlier, and this is actually something that, my singer Chris and I were talking about, and it was a thing that kind of unlocked for me maybe in the last 6 months, maybe a little bit less. Like it's been very recent that this kind of occurred to me was, you know, obviously a lot of people have asked over the years, what do you think was kind of the linchpin to success for Attack Attack? And I'd always kind of described it as it was high school kids making music for other high school kids. I mean, it's just kind of like all you need to know, right? But then recently, you know, as we started diving into this record and just sort of diving into finding out what are we doing now? I remembered what it was actually like. And I started to really think about it and remembering being in Kale's parents' basement. And we were all sitting there working on Stick Stickly. And, you know, as we were writing all these parts to this song, at no point, I don't think any of us were concerned with or thought at all about what was outside that room. Like everything that was happening right there. And everything that we were doing was just because we liked it. And so to some extent, I mean, was there some self-awareness? I'm not really sure. It's kind of like the foundation of it in the sense of not knowing that's what we're doing, but knowing that this feeling is right.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, I think that that's like what music is this makes me happy, this feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think there's some artists that go into a project with the intentional, all right, it's going to be hard here. Then we're going to put electronic here. And then we're going to do this here. And that's going to be our formula. And I think, you know, for me, I was like, they were so young. Like, I don't know if you have that frontal lobe developed into the point where you can think about it like that instead of just being like, this is sick.
Yeah. I mean, I think the superpower and the thing that kind of fingerprinted Attack Attack at that time was, it was very, from a creative aspect, was very lawless. And so, and you can kind of tell when you listen to Someday Came Suddenly, like the album doesn't like mean anything. The songs themselves don't really have any continuity. They don't really make any sense. But the parts are all still very complete and crafted, and they are catchy. And there are a lot of different kinds of hooks in all of it. And it's interesting when you listen to it, like you have no fucking clue what's going to come next, because when we wrote it, we didn't either. So it's just kind of what it is.
That, I mean, like fucking, all right. So you do this, you guys are young kids doing this, doing what you like. And how do you even like follow that up? How do you even go like, okay, this is the thing that we like to do. This is the thing that people like. How do we follow a formula where there is none?
once we started working on self-titled, I think that there was a little bit more intention put into things to make it just a little less chaotic, but to still have, it's still very driven by, if we want a heavy song, we're going to make it heavy, you know, like AC-130s in there. That's just brutally heavy, whatever. But then you've got another track called Fumbles O'Brien that has this crazy intro or whatever. And so the names are insane. Just no real care put into that. We were just sort of arbitrarily picking tunings and keys and stuff. And then just kind of like, all right, we see what we did with Someday Came Suddenly. And this time we can pretty much just add like a little more continuity. You know, you see those songs start to make a little bit more sense. They, at least it's like each song is kind of about something to the point where you can read the lyrics and you're like, oh, okay, cool. They're mad or they're whatever.
The thing that is where I am like, okay, they defined something. What is this thing that it is? And it was, you know, visually you have a logo. At least every girl that I hooked up with that was like an insane relationship for 2 months, it, wearing an Attack shirt that mm-hmm. like doesn't look, that band that you see on that shirt doesn't look, or that shirt doesn't look like how the band sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like one of the first times, which I think is such an, you know, it's such a small minor detail you might skip over, but that was one of the first times that I saw that juxtaposition in this music. And I feel like Attack led the charge in that. You somehow managed to grab that thing. It is ironic and hip and like kind of almost passive aggressive in some ways. And I think that that's like what attracted everybody once they saw you do it mm-hmm. to do it. But literally every girl that I hooked up with like an Attack shirt was like, it was like, I know this is going to be turbulent.
Yeah. It tracks.
So, I guess you kind of touched on it a little bit about the moment that like you guys were kind of like, oh, this is a serious thing. Like mm-hmm. we're going to take the band serious. Like you got signed to Rise Records and then you started working with producer Joey Sturgis. Like what was the shift like going from just, you know, making songs in your friend's basement and being like, oh, we don't have a song in fucking drop C yet. Let's do that. You know, like mm-hmm. what was that shift like for you guys? Going from kind of a fun project to like, this is maybe a real thing now.
There, honestly, for our first album, I mean, we had put out Stick Stickly and then, started just kind of I started wrapping up high school. So I ended up graduating, and then by the time that song came out, I mean, MySpace was cruising for us, like big time. And Rise reached out to us, and we ended up signing like pretty much right when I graduated. So I just kind of picked up my diploma and was like, throw that right in the trash. And then, you know, that was in June. In July, we went and met Joey Sturgis for the first time in person when he was still living in a garage behind a house. And so we started working with him, and you know, the way that we handled, you know, making music, we actually ended up writing more than half the record in the studio with him. And he just kind of, I think we really drove him crazy, like bad. We annoyed him for sure. I mean, we were really annoying at the time.
How long was this whole recording process for this one?
I think it was only like 3 weeks. Okay. It was really not that long for a whole record.
Yeah, when you say annoying, like what do you mean annoying?
Well, just imagine a band of just like yuppie middle-class Ohio teenagers. I think at that time Caleb was 13 was 19. And so everyone was just in between there and, you know, just put them all in a room. Oh, also at that time we got sponsored by Red Bull. So they dropped catastrophic, dude. We were just in there like cold sweating because we're just overloading on caffeine and smoking cigarettes and just living the life that you would exactly expect from a kid, like from that background for sure. Of just, this is so fucking awesome. We're signed to a label. We're making this record. We're smoking cigarettes. We got free Red Bull showing up in cases. The UPS guys
living the fucking dream,
pissed off doing it. Like we're in Indiana, like nowhere in Indiana. And Joey's just sitting there at his computer like, Jesus Christ. Like he had to kick some of us out of the control room because we were just, way too much energy.
Just like too annoying. You
know, just
he's
too
like,
much.
I literally need to melodyne this vocal. Like, shut the fuck up.
Pretty much. But So he kind of, what he added to it was he took our insanity and then he just added like his production to it. And it was just one of those things where I look at that as an intangible variable. It's that could either work really well or it could work like shit. And instead it was like perfect. It was the perfect time and place for us. It was the perfect guy. It was the perfect relationship to start.
How did you guys end up with him?
I think at that time, Craig at Rise was managing Joey. And Joey also was like, he did all the Devil Wears Prada stuff. He did some Before Their Eyes. He did a lot of other bands that were kind of around us at that time. And that was like, we wanted to work with that guy. There was no question. It was just him. There was no, you could have given us a list of 100 names. We've been like, if Joey Sturgis is not on that list, I don't give a fuck.
Bad interview question. Stupid. Like, you know, having a band that sounds like Attack, what did you listen to? Like, what were you bringing into this? Like, what was everybody listening to? Bad, stupid interview question, but ultimately kind of not considering like what Attack sounds like. I think it's actually interesting.
Well, we definitely had, between all of us, we had extremely diverse music tastes, but then also a lot, it was a wide Venn diagram that had a major centerpiece. So it was like, at that time I was listening to metal, like Necrophagist and stuff like that. And I just loved super heavy, dark music. I thought it was sick. I love the technicality of it. I've always loved heavy music, period. Johnny was like way more into pop punk and we all loved pop punk too. And so a lot of that mainstream stuff also was like just all the things you would expect middle schoolers and high schoolers at a time to listen to. We listened to it, but a major standout that would have been a totally opposite texture was we really loved Hello Goodbye. And so a lot of that, like that vocal style and the auto tuning and everything, when we heard that, we were like, absolutely. That's a non-negotiable. That's got to be in here. Yeah. Like that's fucking sweet. And it would be really cool if it had breakdowns with it.
Fuck yeah.
And I mean, so, you kind of nailed it. Like you did nail it. And like, I don't know. That's what, it's kind of why I asked like at the very beginning, like, you know, the self-awareness, like, were you guys self-aware? And I think, you know, the only answer to some things is time, right? Mm-hmm. That it is just the truth. It's the only way you can answer some of these questions. And, you know, I think having this conversation a year or two after this album came back, you might be like, yeah, we were totally self-aware. But like, you know, looking back and having the time happen, you know, there is like an innocence and like being 13-ness.
I know, right?
About it that you can't emulate or you can't really fucking put your finger on.
Yeah. I mean, there was a level of, we did these things because we wanted to. And we, at that time, from a self-awareness standpoint, we knew at that time that we didn't care if we liked it. It made the record. I mean, it wasn't a negotiation. Nobody was going to talk us out of it. It was not a thing to be discussed. It was like, no, this is totally cool. And we love this. And the breakdowns and the auto-tune thing is definitely working and nobody could convince us otherwise. And then like I said, that's kind of like the beginning of that self-awareness of just kind of feeling it and just knowing I love this. And that's the whole point.
Yeah. We kind of touched on this the other day. It was where you're like, it sounds like you're kind of back in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what a great feeling. And honestly, what we've been noticing a lot when we're talking to artists is that they've got this sort of fucking notch filter in their life where it's like, it was great. And now we're back here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting thing to see. And I'm like wondering like what it is about the world and what it is about music and what it is about how old everybody is, like that is bringing us back up to that place.
Well, we are in the age of Aquarius.
Are we?
Where darkness comes to light. So things that have been hidden or secret are now no longer, they're just kind of bubbling up.
You're like a Mike Portnoy guy, right? Like like drum sounds, like he's using this propeller on this like metal guy.
No, honestly, I am a very mediocre drummer, all things considered.
I don't know if you are.
No, I would say when I say that, what I mean by that is I played drums to play drums, but like, I'm not an obsessive drummer. I don't have lots of opinions about drums. My setup is very simple. There's nothing super flashy. It's just the actually playing the drums, like, you know, being a drummer is not the important thing for me. It's that when I do play them, it doesn't really matter to me how I'm playing them. I just love to be playing them. And that feeling of being on stage and having a thing that I've worked on with guys that I love come to life and to see people enjoy it, that's a feeling that is irreplaceable.
That it's, I think that we just had an interview with somebody who was talking about being in the, like we asked at the very end, we were like, what's the, you know, there's a lot of kids that listen to this that are like in bands and all this shit. And this dude's like A&R'd every album. And we were like, what could you suggest to kids that like want to be in bands now that are mm-hmm. listening to this? And he was like, practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was essentially just like, practice with your band, mm-hmm. be in the pocket with your band.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really interesting that you said that, because that's what that sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the feeling and the energy in the room for any show, any concert, any DJ set. That's the thing that people come to see. That's what they buy a ticket for. They are the audience. And we talk about this all the time. And that folded into, you know, for our new album, self-titled two, we really focused on that. We just had this mantra of, it's just not that serious. And it's very easy to lose sight of, you know, there's, as you grow and as you, you know, mature as an artist and as, you know, business starts to become important, you start to have lots of outside pressures and influences, and they're extremely good at kind of muddying the water between your actual connection to music and people. And, some people never see that or figure that out, or maybe too late or whatever. And I know that we have had a lot of discussions about it and just realized none of it matters. What matters is, are we passionate about what we're doing? And is it possible to observe and to feel? Because that's the thing. Like, that's the cool thing about heavy music and breakdowns. The raw fucking energy in the room of people in the pit and all this stuff is like an awesome feeling. Especially if you're somebody like me, who's been a very angry child and young adult, you know? So it's like, I gravitated toward that stuff because it helped bring up and just, I guess, shed light on these feelings that otherwise didn't have a place to do that. And so, you know, I just kind of look at the whole thing as, there has to be an experience. There has to be like a nonverbal connection. There has to be an energy that when people come in, you all kind of sink in a way and you share this experience that is one of a kind.
So funny that, you know, like that was a really, really great way to explain it. I laugh because it's like, I was like, I don't know you very, very, very well, but it's like, I would never pin you as angry. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. It's like, I just never would.
I've done a lot of therapy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I just like, a I was lot. Like, that's why I was like, what the fuck? And, you know, I think it's really, really, really cool to hear you say that. Coming from a band that, like, you know, the term in crabcore came from, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we just have to, at face value, that's that. And you're talking about this in this very serious, like, serious way.
Well, I saw today. So we just did like kind of a fun little stunt together. Andrew came on the show, or Wetzel came on the show last week, and we filmed some clips of him promoting his country album. And then, you know, we put up the clips today, and I saw one of the comments, somebody was like, this is the worst fucking thing I've ever heard. And you wrote back and you're like, been hearing it for the last 15 years. I was like, that's fucking perfect. And like, so on brand. And yeah, you guys fucking got, you've been through it. Like, I feel like sticks like the, you were literally like maybe one of the first viral videos on the internet, like first music memes. Videos aside, like it's a full meme, full viral thing. And for whatever reason, also today I ended up on like Rebecca Black's page. I don't know if she put out new music or something, but it like popped up. And I was thinking about like the transformation that she went through and like the mm-hmm. therapy that she's had to do. And she's openly talked about like what she's had to work through to like come to terms and like accept Friday and like what it means and what it was for her.
That's a wild sentence that you just put together right there.
Yeah.
Well, it really,
I feel like the parallels are there though. Right?
Exactly. Yes. I mean, and now she's on tour with fucking Katy Perry.
Yep.
Right. And I think it's like, there's a level of acceptance and like I think that, you know, the musicality is there. And also at the same time, while, yeah, sure, we are talking about like this memification of the things, the numbers at the time didn't lie.
No.
So taking it back to that, though, what was some of that therapy and work and like coming to terms? Like, tell us a little bit about the journey from, you know, being like a meme or a joke or a laughing stock to being like, yeah, that's fucking part of our history. That's who we are. And that's who we've always been. And we have that same spark now because it's fun and it's always been fun. Like, what was that? What's the journey been like from then to now?
In retrospect, funny. And I'll try to run it through in a fairly comedic way. But so first of all, I don't know if you guys remember Absolute Punk.
Of course.
They fucking hated us. You could have told me that people were being paid to shit on us in that comment section, and I would have believed you. There was so much just vitriol. I mean, there's fucking just filth. Like, I'm like, damn, dude.
That's our Dan Aussie.
It was just so wild. I mean, you know, going from just being these high school kids in a basement writing music just that they wanted to fucking hear. I mean, really, the most innocent thing you can imagine. And then being so proud and like presenting it and then just immediately being hit with a tidal wave of just absolute fuck you guys was not great. That was super unideal. And also, I think a lot of people kind of glossed over. I mean, I have newspaper clippings from like the New York Times and the Guardian, and then Fox News ran a segment on us. Like we went international at like a real press level of them kind of doing the same thing. Obviously not as shitty as Absolute Punk, because I'm pretty sure you can't publish a lot of the things anywhere that was on Absolute Punk, but, and I will not repeat them, but it was like, there was this sort of, what are you doing thing, you know, like making us feel like we were the idiots. And, I know for me, it was really shocking, and obviously like the other guys were younger. And so I can just kind of only imagine how that felt and what that did, because I mean, think Caleb was 13. I was 19. Developmentally, big gap. Yeah. So it's like one thing to tell a 19-year-old that whatever, you know, but a 13-year-old at that scale, like, I don't know about that. That's not, that's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's like not good. And so, and then everybody else too, you know, John, Johnny, Whiting, same thing. And so kind of springing forward through that whole thing, I think it impacted all of us differently. But I know for me, from my experience, it made me, I'm not sure. I don't know what the word is for it. I kind of go towards bitter, but it's not that. It's not bitterness. It's just a, I think it's just sort of like a larger feeling of rejection, but it's on a level and at a scale that is just kind of outside of the bounds of real life. Right. Like
nobody experiences like Fox News doing this thing.
Adults on fucking television being like, what are these kids doing? Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm like, being fucking 17, you dickhead. What does it look like we're doing? What the fuck? Like, what's wrong with you? Holy shit. And we actually said that. And the one guy that was on there, fuck, I forget what his name is, but it was on Fox News' Red Eye. And I remember we made a video and posted it. And I think he sent us an apology.
Really?
He was like, because we were like, what does that fucking say about you, dude? You're out there on the news talking shit about a bunch of 16 and 17-year-old kids.
Yeah.
And we dug in on it. We looked at all of his social media profiles. We're like, you got a dog. You got no wife. You know, all this. She's like, what does that say about you?
And okay, I'm right. I'm literally right here.
And then I think he ended up reaching out to us or emailing us. And he's like, you're right. Like, I don't know what that says about me, but it's not good.
Right.
I'm sorry. Wow.
I hope it was Tucker Carlson.
No, it wasn't. It was some guy that no one's ever heard of. And I don't know that he existed after that.
You guys ended his career.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah.
I've definitely deleted a couple of people on the internet on accident. It's just people love
to obliterate them.
I accidentally nuked this kid on Facebook a few years back when the band first came back. And it was like, I saw you guys in 2017. Your singer came out on stage. He was fat. He was out of breath, all this other shit. And all I did was say, I have no idea who you saw, but like, we haven't played a show since 2013. And everyone's like, it's Asking Alexandria. It's whatever. It's whatever. And the post took off and it went to Reddit's R quit your bullshit. And then it went to the front page and then BuzzFeed picked it up. And I was like, kid, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I did not intend for that to happen. I was just fucking letting you know.
Sometimes like it feels good though.
Well, I mean, no, because like to me, I genuinely don't feel good about that because yeah. I have also been the subject of unbelievably like unwarranted outrage. And yeah. I don't want anyone to experience that.
Yeah.
But also, maybe you should have shut the fuck up. You know what I'm saying?
Dude, so I was literally just showing him this today because like our most viewed TikTok, like we made this, it was like some dumb trend where you like showed yourself stretching and we put like a getting ready to play, press play on songs we didn't write for thousands of emo kids. And then like somebody commented and they were like, thousands is an exaggeration. And then I just replied to their thing with a video of us playing at Coachella for like 20,000 people. Yeah. And then their profile's just gone, like completely deleted. Comments deleted, everything.
You just got to let them know.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't know. Shut up.
You should check again.
Yeah. This is also at the time when the internet was like, we didn't know how to have this conversation back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't exist yet.
This didn't exist yet. Like this, we couldn't foresee anything like that. And to be navigating those feelings as a 13 to 19 year old in a new digital landscape that is pretty much the Wild West is true. Like really, you know, you coming on here and saying it out loud really puts it into perspective. Like it really does put it into perspective. I can gas you a little bit though, because one of my buddies who I consider like one of the coolest people I know, and I know a lot of cool fucking people.
I'm right here.
And I was like, he's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm doing this research for this artist. And, you know, granted, I told him and he's like, I don't know what that is. Like, can you send it to me? Because he's just like in a different world.
Yeah.
And I sent him the video and he was like, he literally just wrote back. He was like, this fucking kicks ass, you know? And I think we have turned the corner, or we've completed the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And which to me, you know, not even being a part of that whole thing back then I was in it, but I wasn't in that corner of it. As you know, there were so many different little fucking things. To me, it felt justifying for Attack Attack. And then I was like, Attack Attack kicks ass. And then that's when TJ and I started talking about it. But I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
No, go ahead.
When we were doing this, I was like, I can't keep fucking track of the amount of people. Like there was a point where I was like, I'm done writing notes. Like I'm done. Like I'm never going to be able to be like, and then at this point, this guy, and then this guy, like what the fuck?
Mm-hmm. How much of that was like, because of like outside pressure, and then how much of it, I don't know. Did like the outside pressure affect any of the internal struggles to keep the band together?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no real way to describe all of that whole situation, you know, all of us, like I said, on our individual paths. And I'm at that age, those are the rest of your life defining years. Right. And so in a lot of instances, it's very important segments of childhood are now defined by this profound level of visibility and feedback that otherwise normal people aren't subjected to. And what does that do to a person? And, you know, it hurts. It really does. And, you know, depending on who you are and, you know, your family and like go add in all these other extenuating factors, like those things definitely add up and it makes things super complicated. And if you don't know, you know, at this point, after again, extensive therapy, right? Of reaching a point of, I'm not happy with my relationships. I'm not happy with my communication. I'm not happy with how I'm being a person. And it's frustrating to me because I know that these things could be better and I could be doing a better job. I don't know fucking how. So what do? Same reason why, like, if you keep changing oil and stripping the drain plug, what do? You hire a fucking mechanic, right? You get somebody that's trained to deal with the problem and be like, well, don't fucking do this, right? So I go and hire somebody with a wall of diplomas and I say, speak. Like, you tell me, because I'm fed up. I'm fucking this up bad, real bad. And I see that and I want to fix this. And, you know, it took me a long time to get to that point to see that. So I just wonder for other people that are in this similar position, like, do they ever get to that point? Do they, you know, we all have coping mechanisms. We all create, I mean, you've seen prime example. I made Cowboy Wetzel, right? I just created this persona that is very much intrinsically a part of who I am, but I've made like a crazier version of a side of myself that like, that's the guy that can put the cowboy hat on and look at the audience and go, fuck you guys for absolute punk. Like that's on you. All right. You're not going to bully me around. I got a cowboy hat on. All right. This guy doesn't get bullied. You guys are, you're on the other side of the screen. I'm in front of the lens. Okay. And it's, how do you get to that place? How do you reach a point of saying, you know, I'm not good and I need to figure out how to fix that or whatever. And it's just, you know, when you see artists, like I see a lot of them just really struggling or they're still fighting a lot of this stuff and they don't have the words yet for it, or they just haven't had that thing happen to where it flips over where they go, I deserve better. You know,
do you think it's also, you know, at this time being so young, do you think that there's like, is a little bit of arrested development, like where you're, that's where you're stuck. Like that's where you're stuck, that those feelings are like where you're stuck until you remove yourself from it long enough and have enough life experience to like really look back at it. And which is really like why I'm opening this up to self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that self-awareness is the ultimate key that unlocks the door to attack.
Yeah, I agree.
Cut that. That's really good. Somebody needs to cut that. That's
a good, that's a good somebody quote. Cut that part, please. That. Thank
no,
you.
No, that's a good part. Okay. And then, okay. It was also difficult to keep up with like all of the, there is beefs, which I was like, I'm trying to learn this, you know, in like real time.
Yeah.
You and know,
there's a very famous story about you guys parting ways with Austin Carlisle in a parking lot in Salt Lake City.
Yes.
Was that as dramatic as one can imagine or as the lore lends itself?
It's way worse.
Is it?
Than what's out there, for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
In what way?
The rest of the band had instinctually picked up on something that they didn't like.
Mm.
You know, we started to see a person that we knew was not going to work with us, and we had no idea like really what was happening. And we being young, fortunately for us, were like, as soon as we felt this way, we were ready to act and we're not going to ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
We're like, this is something is fucking wrong here and we are not going to wait around to find out what it is. Like this has to stop now. And you know, at that time too, definitely tensions were just kind of high across the board because, you know, circle back to all of the super negative input. We were definitely very, pretty gassed up. Like we were just kind of ready to fight, you know?
Yeah.
And so that parting was definitely as dramatic as you can possibly imagine. And then goes even deeper to, at the time, you know, I had a lot of pressure put on me to sort of just run and steer the ship and like look out for everybody. And I definitely felt that there was a significant level of trust put in me by
the oldest.
Austin was older than me.
Okay.
But I was also kind of babysitting him too.
Sure.
And so, but the parents definitely had put a lot of trust in me to do the right thing. Like look out for these kids. And so I was like, okay, cool. But then also at the same time thinking, who the fuck is supposed to look out for me?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know shit. I'm not going to say that at that time, but like I was really felt that pressure and was super stressed out about it. So, I mean, when we came to that decision, I just was like, I'll double down. I'll triple down. I don't give a fuck. Like, this is what the group has decided. I'm in on it. Fuck them. Don't care what happens. And so we did that. And it was a real shit storm. I mean, I fielded calls that I'm going to be 36 in May. I've been doing this a long time. And, you know, I own a record label, publishing company. I work in management. I do a lot of really cool things with super cool artists. The way that our team talked to me at that time, I would never let anybody speak to me that way now. Like, no fucking shot, dude. And so the fact that adults in and around us in the business were just absolutely fucking shitting on me, a 19-year-old for this decision, which, to be frank, they had no clue what was actually going on.
Yeah, they're not in the van with you guys.
Didn't even really bother to ask.
Yeah.
They just saw it as, like, you can't get rid of that guy. And I just said, fuck you. And that was definitely a major point of contention, but that was a very, very dramatic thing that took place. And at that time, and then as that situation began to, like, unfold over the years, as you'll find if you dig into stuff, I harbored an insane amount of resentment and anger for that, that we were not listened to and that we knew that something was going on. And like none of the actual adults bothered to honor that or ask about that. And I've got a little red book with the fucking list of names on it. So let me just do attack because I swear to God, if I can't, that red book's coming out, motherfucker.
Hell yeah.
I want to touch a little bit on some of those things that you saw, heard that were not, you're like, this is completely fucking false. Like I'm reading these things about me. I'm getting calls about these things that are about me that are just like, this is not true. Or some of the things that you did see that you're like, man, that's absolutely, that is true. That is, or some things that I just, that's kind of like where I was like, I'm stopping with this. There was a point where there's a threshold when researching attack where I was like, I'm just going to talk to you about mm-hmm. this and be like, cool. Cause I couldn't keep up because it was one person said this thing. One person said this thing, this did this. And I'm like, all right, I've been wrong on this podcast before. I don't want to be wrong 20 times in a row.
Right. Yeah. My blood pressure is very high right now.
Do you want another Modelo or something or water?
Yeah. Modelo, 100%, dude. I just like, that really struck a chord for me.
It is 7:30 in the morning.
It's 7:38.
I'm so sorry we didn't get limes. I really fucked up.
It's okay. I would have liked it with a lime.
I'll get you limes tonight, though, for
sure. Okay, okay, good. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, there's going to be so many limes in the green room at emo night.
Really, what's up with that? Oh, it's for that guy. And then I'll
kick the door open. The bartenders are going to be like, why? Why?
Dude, it's awesome because I think we just had the first scary moment on our podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that rocks. Like, yeah. I love like, oh, that's a first. Chill out, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. He's picking it up.
What's up?
He's picking it up.
He knows.
The vibe is deteriorated.
Really,
and I'm working to reset it quickly.
Okay. What was like?
I'm also going to turn on the AC for a little. So sorry if that, if you guys can hear that at home.
And I do, I'm going to be 5 minutes late to this thing because I really would like to continue this. I want to talk, but TJ, I mean, feel you can go as long as you want. I just have to be on this thing. Cause you're fucking playing main stage Warped Tour and like, you know, look, that was fucking back at that time, being that young, we were just talking to those other dudes. Like that's the fucking dream.
Yeah.
Like that's a dream come true.
That was like the goal on the back porch at one of the other guys' house. And I remember I specifically called that out when we finished the record and came back home. We were sitting out on the back porch and, you know, smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
And, as you do when you're a hell teenager, yeah. It's like the baddest shit you can hell do for yeah. sure. And, Camel Lights. And so, you know, we're just ripping Camel Lights like crazy. And then I looked at all of them and it was like, I got a download from the universe. I was like, main stage, here it comes.
Yeah.
I could see it. Like I could literally see it in my fucking mind. I was looking at it. And I just called it right there. That was 2008. And I'm like, it's going to happen. Like I'm 100% sure of it. Nobody can convince me otherwise. This is definitely fucking happening. And then we just rode that trend right there. And then we got there and I said,
here we are. Told you guys.
It's, which is so fun because like I was watching, you know, there's some pretty like in-depth shit about you guys. Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, I don't know if you watch it or have seen any of it. Like, I always find it really interesting when an artist is like, yeah, I watch everything because I don't watch shit about me. I can't do that.
Kyle's brought up a couple of things to me, some of like the really deep dive synopses, and I'm like, you have to turn that off. It just was like, just dread. I was like having a panic attack. He was in Nashville. Like, it was like last year, right? And he pulls up this whole like super deep dive on the Austin thing and he starts playing it. And they start going through like the Facebook post that I made, which I'm sure you saw because it's pretty high on the list of things that come up when you start dredging into the shit there. And the guy's like reading it back. And I'm just sitting there like, yeah. I'm about to pass out. It was like just so fucking stressful to hear it. And I'm like, I don't know what to do about this, but you have to turn that off. Like, you have to stop. And he was like, dude, it's super thorough. He's like stoked on it. He's like, this is great. You did such a good job. And I'm like, shut it the fuck off, please. Oh my God.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And I mean, there's like a lot of the guys in the, that you've had in the band throughout the history of the band have gone on to, okay, what are some of the things and projects and bands that the people who have been in Attack Attack have done? Because I think it speaks to the musicality and the institution that is Attack Attack, what the people who were in it, even for short periods of time, have gone on and done.
I mean, pretty much everybody was on some shit, and there was an extremely interesting dynamic creatively and otherwise that coalesced into creating what Attack Attack was. And I also think it's kind of one of those things where the star that burns twice as bright burns half as long. Maybe I should have, my mind's eye should have gone a little bit past Warped Tour main stage, you know, because that's where it imploded basically. But, you know, I mean, look at Caleb. He's a fantastic writer, fantastic artist, always was. I mean, even when he was fucking 13, like we were the ones that said, get a keyboard. And he did. And he just started playing a microcorg and then figuring out how to fucking use it. He was one of the first people I ever saw to use Fruity Loops. And he just like picked that shit up. I mean, the dude is a genius, like actually, like he's a super high IQ guy, and his ability to learn and to adapt and to create is special. Like it's definitely something to look at for sure. And so the fact that he just started like picking this shit up, and then he was like, you know, hey, we need a screamer. You want to try to scream? He started screaming. Then he becomes the front man. Then, you know, all these things.
He's just one of those people that like is good at whatever he puts his mind to.
Yeah. He can just do it. Like he can just fucking do it. He's that guy. And so, you know, Beartooth is that band that when things kind of got whatever, he was like, it's time to pull the fucking parachute. And he did. And then went on to do that. And I mean, that's just a true testament to his talent and his ability to create and for people to resonate with it. And then Johnny, same way. Johnny had a slightly different path. But you can see when you look at Bill Murray, his project, and you see how he does stuff, you can see so much of his, like so much of his personality that was on display in Attack Attack. Like you just see it. It's like, you're like, you were definitely in that band. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And people make comparisons now. They're like, oh, this is just fucking Diet, this thing or that thing or whatever. And they honestly, they present it like you guys are just trying to do what Bill Murray's doing or whatever. And I just kind of look at that and I go, what are you fucking talking about? Like we were creative partners for our formative years as artists. You think we don't share a sense of humor? You think that we don't have similar ideas? You don't think that when we were all cooking up dumbass ideas that we weren't all just totally gassed on it and like making it bigger and bigger and bigger? Of course we're going to have similar ideas, even if we're apart, even if we don't fucking speak. Like at a certain point, we were formed together.
Yeah.
And so there is no way that these projects are not going to share creative aspects.
Well, that's what also brought you guys together. Mm-hmm. Is that thing. And that is what's so interesting about it, because it's, you know, dude, you internet, the people, it should be, I want it to be taken away for a year. I think everybody has to be grounded. I think we all have to think about what we've done. I think that everything needs to go away, because like,
there should be a review of some kind. Yeah. Audit
that. It makes the most sense. If you were to bring it back on somebody else and be like, okay, those are the jokes that you guys told when you're 13 and you do this and you do this, and you don't still think the same way and you guys have gone completely different paths. You don't think that you're still going to laugh at the same Dane Cook joke that you guys watched the fucking stand up when you guys watched at 2 a.m. when
somebody shit on the coats, dude. Like it's always somewhere deep in there.
If you just say it like that, it makes the most sense. And I think it's so fucked that people just don't do one extra step of being like, oh yeah.
Dude, speaking of shit on the coats and the internet, we saw this video today of this woman who like was having road rage and she went and diarrhea'd on the hood of the other person's car.
Dude, that's such a power move.
Yeah, it was awesome. She just got out of her car.
She didn't even take off her pants. She just like pulled her shorts to the side.
She just like went, it was awesome. She got out of her car and passenger seat, went behind her, pulled her van down and shit on the hood.
It's like, there's this other viral video from, I don't know, it's not that long ago, maybe a year ago, but it was this dude that was like, I owe the IRS $60,000. Ah, and he starts pissing his pants. He's like, fuck you. And he pees his pants.
Dude, that's the coolest thing you can do is when you're like mad, just piss and shit your pants.
What do you say to that? There's no, there's nothing is above that.
Yeah, dude. I know. That's the coolest thing. Dude, I have to dip. TJ, you're going to keep going.
Yeah, we're going to keep going. Morgan's in school right now.
In school?
Yeah, he's got to go to class.
For what?
Music production.
Music production? You're going to school for that?
Yeah,
he's... Just download Fruity Loops. What the fuck are you doing? YouTube Academy.
What?
Just be neurotic.
I'm doing all of it.
You're talking to the guy that Rage started a publishing company from scratch. I got you. I know what you're talking about. It's a burden and a superpower, dude. It's nuts.
All right.
What the hell's he doing over there?
Sorry, everybody.
Don't get clotheslined.
We love you.
I love you, too. All right. Come on, buddy.
Okay. Timmy, you got to go. He's staying.
He's like, nah.
He's like, I'm chilling.
In here. Oh, he was under the couch. Yeah, go on, buddy.
Where should we start again? Okay. So, I feel like... One of my favorite things that I saw is like one of the random little things was like, I think it kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier. It's just like, you guys had to find a way to take it in stride. And I loved when you guys put out like that Ohio Crabcore shirt. I thought mm-hmm. that was fucking brilliant. And that's like that, like being able to see it and like own it and like turn it back. Like you said, like the lens is on me. You know, you guys can be on the other side if you want to.
Yeah.
As you've entered this new era of attack, like, what do you think is going to keep you, keep that sense of humor and self and everything? Like, how do you, what, like with the other guys that you've surrounded yourself with now for this iteration of attack, like, are they all on the same page? Are you guys like you? I know you mentioned it maybe to me off camera, but like I think you were talking a little bit about how like we realized it was like too serious,
mm-hmm.
and now it's fun again. What are you guys doing to keep it that way this time?
Yeah, I mean, so the guys with me now, Cameron, Ryland, Chris, Chris and I were in a band together before this. We had a butt rock project that we did. That's how we met. But he's from the Cleveland scene. I mean, we've been one degree of separation for like tons of years. And, you know, his band just didn't get as big as Attack. That's kind of like the only difference between the two of us. Right.
Yeah.
And same with Cameron. Cameron's played in like a whole bunch of deathcore bands like Demolisher, and he's played on tour with Traitors and other stuff. So again, also very adjacent to the scene, lots of friends, super close. You know, it just kind of happened when it was supposed to happen is how I feel about it. And Ryland is the same way. He was in Inhale Exhale, which was a band that they were on, I think, Solid State Tooth and Nail, right? And I was jamming their first album when I was going to Career Center in high school. And so obviously we make fun of Ryland because he's older than us, you know, not by a lot. I mean, we're all fucking old at this point. Like I said, I'm going to be 36. But we're like, Ryland, you're turning 42 this year. And he's
Morgan's
like,
fucking turning 42. Yeah.
Dude, Ryland's always like, I'm the same age as you guys. But yeah, I mean, we all could have been like, it could have been them from the start. That's sure. how close it is and yeah. how ingrained they are in, you know, just this culture and the scene and stuff. And we just kind of found each other later. And so they've had a lot of the same experiences and perspectives. And yeah, we're very locked in that regard, that because we're older and we're in our 30s, we all have careers. Like, we all make money. None of us need to be in attack.
Sure.
And I should have quit this band in 2011, like when Caleb pulled the ripcord, I should have beat him to the punch. That would have saved me a lot of fucking trouble, right? But I didn't. And, you know, fate does what it does. And so, you know, with these guys, it's like there's such an appreciation for what a fucking thing attack is. And it's honestly like it has just proven on its own that it's bigger than... I don't know. Like Morgan was saying, it was like these, I would have these tumultuous 2-month relationships with girls in attack shirts.
Yeah.
And it's like, had no idea the band sounded like those shirts looked, you know what I mean? And so it's just been really apparent to me this whole time that this thing is just, it is like it. And yeah. So all of that kind of in perspective, as we're looking at this, we go, none of us need to be in this. We don't need to do this, but we love it. And we see something really special in Attack Attack specifically. And, you know, while I have way more blood in the band than they do, you know, it's a project that we can work on, and we see that, like, we can't, Attack Attack is one of those bands where we can do whatever the fuck we want. We're one of the few bands where it's like, it doesn't matter what it is. We could probably get away with
it. Yeah, you guys could fucking be like EDM dubstep producers and nobody would like bat an eye.
They'd be like, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, that's the right path for them. For
half of the fans are going to be like, that's cool. And then the ones that aren't, they'll be like, cool. The first half, we'll just recruit another half. And then we'll just kind of be moving across the field.
100%. So tell me a little bit about the new album, Attack Attack 2.
So the new album is super stupid. One of my favorite tracks on it is called I Complain on r/metalcore.
Yeah.
And... So we definitely, you know, through a lot of our discussions and everything, we just reached this point of none of us have to be here.
Right.
We all can do other things. The success of the band is not important to us. And that was what triggered the thought for me of remembering what it was like writing Stick Stickly in a room, of just being wholly unconcerned with anything outside of the room and outside of the world and any kind of like performance objective or anything, just no thought. And we discussed that. We talked about that. And we said, you know what? Let's just be stupid. Like, let's just be dumb. It's okay for this thing to just be our outlet. It doesn't have to be for anybody else. It doesn't have to do anything. It just needs to be a thing that when we're in the writing room and when we bring people in, it's funny. It's not that fucking serious. And we can write stupid music that we like just for the sheer fact that we fucking like it. And nobody can stop us. And that's just...
It's awesome.
That's what kicked the record off. So we just kept going.
Well, speaking of the writing room, like, tell me a little bit about like what the actual process of making this album was like. Like, it sounds to me like you got at least the spirit of Caleb's Basement back in the writing here. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, obviously you're older, you have access to much nicer studios than that now. Like, where were you guys? What were you doing? What were the days like? Tell me about it.
Yeah. So a really interesting thing is a comment that I saw earlier was basically saying you would be incredibly surprised at how many metal guys there are in country right now.
Oh, yeah.
It would shock you. And it shocked me, you know, I work with a really great country producer, and I'm honestly genuinely deeply embedded in that world at this point. And it's kind of growing, and I did not have that on my bingo card at all. So it's super funny. But I meet all these guys and they're like, yeah, I know Attack Attack. And I go, fucking really? Like, are you for real? And then they do. And I'm like, that's so wild that that's possible. So we've been assembling this kind of ragtag cast of writers. And, you know, one of the producers that I work with was also my guitar player in my old band, the Butt Rock band that Chris and I were in. So our guitar player, Andrew Bayless, I work with him on his management team in Nashville. And so he produces all this country stuff, but I was like, hey, do you want to get in on this? And he goes, yeah, absolutely. Cause it's fun. It's fun for him. It's like, hey, just I'm like making all this
friends fucking making fun music.
Yeah.
For fun.
I'm making all this country music and that's cool. It's definitely cool. Yeah. But you know what else is cool? Writing a bunch of dumbass like breakdowns and other stuff and just taking all of our knowledge and experience and going, okay, cool. We were just kind of winging it when we were younger, but now that we like know, now we can really do this intentionally and we can really craft these hooks and the breakdown call outs. And it sounds kind of silly to say it, but it's like, we take so much pride in crafting these, make sure that synth part is really like this. But as you said, I mean, we're older and we have more experience and we also have way more resources. And like, I can just sink some resources into it to like get it right.
Yeah.
You know, cause that's the point. The point is to just make it exactly totally what I want to hear. And so that's just that the writing room was like that every single time. It was coming in, bringing in other writers and guys that work in pop and country and on stuff that is impossibly more successful than anything Attack Attack could do.
You did all of it in Nashville.
Yeah. But it's the same thing for them. They're like, I'm doing these high pressure, big, you know, productions for major labels and stuff. And this is a room that I can just come in and I can just like get out the ideas And we're like dragging it out of him, kind of like egging him on. Like, I'll just have another beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, have another one. Let's see what happens, you know? And so they get a chance to create where we can set the tone of, it doesn't matter. There are no rules. The only rule is that every single part of this song has got to be fucking cool. And it doesn't matter what it is, what it sounds like, what's in it. We have all kinds of stupid samples. We have elephants like trunk blaring. We're like reaching deep into splice and saying, how do we make this work in this part? Like, how do we turn this stupid thing into something?
I mean,
it sounds
like all the things that like I like about Attack Attack.
It was all the things I liked about Attack Attack.
Love that. Looking back on Attack Attack 1, the self-titled, we always ask this. Is there anything about that album that you would change?
Not a single thing.
You'd love it all the way through. There's nothing like when you listen to it, you're like, that's annoying. I wish we did this.
No, honestly, no, not with that record. That was kind of like the perfect thing of we knew exactly what we needed to know. We had the precise amount of experience to double down on all the things that were great about Someday Came Suddenly, make something different but complementary that stands on its own. And like that album solidified Attack Attack. I think anybody would agree with that. And even today, it's so crazy listening back to a lot of music from that era. You know, how do these records hold up? And this is one of those ones where I don't listen to Someday Came Suddenly or This Means War ever. But I still have like, I'll still rip Sexual Man Chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, or Reed Nam Nevada. And it's the same thing live. Like, we love playing those tracks live. They're perfect for what this band does. They have this perfect balance of energy and catchiness and heaviness. And it just works, and it's continuing to work. And I just kind of look at that, and you know, before I have to get rotator cuff surgery, you know, from patting myself on the back here, it's just like, I can't believe we were able to pull that off. But I'm so happy, even to the level of, I'm still really good friends with Joey Sturgis. He was just texting me earlier, like, you're a fucking psycho. This is hilarious. Like, why are you doing this? Also, it's amazing. But, you know, we talk about like that also for him at that time was kind of like his apex. That was like the beginning of something.
Well, everybody
something
started
really
working
special.
With him after that.
Yeah, I know. But it was like that mix in particular. This is the thing that where the wheels really fall off in that older music is the sound, like how it was put together from a technical aspect. And Joey hit this spot where it was like, what if I just make you essentially a timeless Crybcore record and you still listen to it? And it's right. It's exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds better than a lot of like, I don't know. I feel like there's some records that we've done on this podcast, like where I'm like, this literally does not hold up at all.
It's just not that good.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I get what you guys were trying to do, and I see what was influenced from this.
Yeah.
But this one kind of sounds like ass. Like, this record though, I put it on yesterday driving home from work, and I was like, all right.
It's like still kind of punching it out with current production, right?
Yeah. You hear it, like, and you just sound sonically good.
You don't think, for someone that's never heard the band before, if you played that and said it came out yesterday, they would
100%. Yeah.
They'd be like, 100%. Yeah, that's cool, I guess.
But I think that speaks to like the overall influence of Attack Attack in general too. It's like, I feel like it spawned so many people that just were trying to do what you guys were doing slightly differently. And like, you changed metalcore forever, whether or not you meant to or not, like, you did.
Definitely not on purpose.
No, but you guys were having fun and like, you were authentic about it. And like, that's what shows through. I think that's the common thread that I think we see in like the albums that are good, is like, does this person fucking believe it? Like, are they doing it well, and do they believe it? And if that is true, then it's a good album.
Yeah.
Like, it could be Bright Eyes, he can't fucking sing at all, but you can hear that he fucking means every word, you know? And like, when you guys were making this album, like, you could tell, like, you actually loved it. Like, you believed in what you were doing. You had the vision, and it shows. And I'm excited for the next one, Attack Attack 2. I'm glad you guys got this spark back. It's been really fun doing like this publicity stunt with you. Like, thank you for bringing us in and thinking about it. And I'm excited for Country Wetzel tonight at Emo Night.
I'm afraid of what he's going to bring to the stage. I'm not totally sure, but it's going to be a really good time. And also likewise, I mean, it's been extremely, you know, I don't know. It's super cool. it's the craziest thing in the world for me to be at this stage in my life and doing all these different things. And somehow Attack Attack is still like, we're still trying to figure out what happened here.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, I don't know. It's an honor to have had a hand in that and to see that. I just started a band in high school with some of my friends.
It's lightning in a bottle.
The fucking ripples just keep rippling. And I just think it's the fucking coolest thing. And I think, you know, for just kind of the fandom out there, you guys need to calm the fuck down. Like, seriously, calm the fuck down, okay? It's not like, I know we made it our mantra to say it's not that serious. It's not that serious.
Just have some fun.
Yeah, it's okay to have fun. It's okay to like stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't have to justify, like, why something or another thing. Like, it's just fucking music, okay?
Yeah.
Calm the fuck down.
I love it.
Limes, though, next time.
You're definitely sure. Getting the limes. All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to get to about this album or the new album?
I don't think so. I think we got a good start. We're going to watch it all evolve. There'll be more to talk about later. I can guarantee that.
Love it. It'll keep rippling, you know? All right, guys. Thank you for watching CD Burners. Make sure to like and prescribe, and we'll see you soon.